My name is Patricia Kathleen, and this podcast series will contain interviews I conduct with female and female-identified entrepreneurs, founders, co-founders, business owners, and industry gurus. These podcasts speak with women and women-identified individuals across all industries in order to shed light for those just getting into the entrepreneurial game, as well as those deeply embedded within it. Histories, current companies, and lessons learned are explored in the conversations I have with these insightful and talented powerhouses. The series is designed to investigate a female and female-identified perspective in what has largely been a male-dominated industry in the USA to date. I look forward to contributing to the national dialogue about the long overdue change of women in American business arenas, and in particular, entrepreneurial roles. You can contact me via my media company website, wild.agency, that's wilde.agency, or my personal website, patriciakathleen.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's start the conversation. Hi everyone and welcome back. This is Patricia Kathleen and I am so excited today to be sitting down with Catherine McCullough. She is the president, CEO, and CMO of McCullough Landscape Architecture. And just a quick bio on Catherine before I introduce her or welcome her today. Prior to joining the McCullough Landscape Architecture, Catherine was marketing director for the Westfield Corporation's San Diego Super Regional Shopping Center in UTC. In 2002, Catherine became president and chief executive officer of the McCullough Landscape Architecture, allowing the firm to become a woman-owned small business enterprise by the state of California. With expertise in many market sectors, the McCullough Landscape Architecture's project list expands into hospitality, retail, and entertainment, as well as mixed-use, education, and institutional properties. Designing from their studio-style office in the up-and-coming Makers Quarter of downtown San Diego's IDEA, Idea District, the firm's capabilities stretch across the globe with a concentration on the state of California. Catherine is a past president for the San Diego chapter of the Society for Marketing Professional Services, is a certified professional services marketer, and serves on the marketing and programs education committees for the Commercial Real Estate Women Crew San Diego chapter. In her spare time, Catherine serves as chapter president of the San Diego FIDMA Alumni Association, as well as neighborhood coordinator for the Morley Field Historic Streetlight District in her North Park community. That is an amazing bio. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great. I'm so excited to jump into everything. For all of you listening, I just want to give a quick roadmap. For today, we're going to get into Catherine's academic background, and then immediately following that, some of her career following her education. Then we're going to get into questions regarding her current company and endeavors, and what she's projecting for the next 3 years out. 3 to 5 years is usually where we go with that. And then we'll wrap up the entire interview with the advice that Catherine maybe has for some people coming up or those of you seasoned and in the field. So let's dive right into what is your academic background?
So I graduated from FIDM, F-I-D-M, with a degree in marketing. And that was obviously focused in the fashion industry, but it was more on the management, marketing, kind of retail management side of things.
And FIDM stands for the Fashion Institute of Design
and Merchandising.
Okay, right. Gotcha. And yes. That was in LA?
That was in Los Angeles, right.
Okay.
Yes. Right from there into retail management right away. I had graduate placement programs, and I was interviewed on campus and had a job right out of college. Managing a retail store, and worked my way through small specialty and then into department management, where I then kind of forayed into working for a retail shopping center. So that's how I kind of made my way to what was Westfield, and before that was Trizet Con. And owned super regional shopping centers in San Diego.
That's a huge jump. Retail, yeah. retail store into the Westfield. I mean, for those of you that don't know, the Westfield Shopping Center is kind of this behemoth
right.
in San Diego.
Right, right. They are, and they are very diversified in their portfolio across the globe, actually. Mm-hmm. But I started out in a small center that was not a Westfield property, but that experience in the small center got me the position to work with the larger developer.
Did you know from the offset when you first began in your retail environment, did you know that you wanted to go to more of these like larger project-based endeavors?
Well, I can tell you that my desire from working in a small specialty retail position to working in a department store was kind of the mindset that I realized it's a very narrow field to be mm-hmm. working in a small specialty store because you're either really destined to be a district manager, regional manager, that type of thing, and it's kind of the vertical is really difficult. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you go into a department store, you have a much broader range. You can get into HR, you can get into buying, you can, you know, get into more of the behind the scenes of what makes the retailer work. In which case, that is exactly what I did. I went to work from working actually with The Gap and Express and those types of retailers. I took a job with Saks Fifth Avenue, actually based on an internship I had when I was in school at FITM. And that allowed me to have the experience I needed to get the job, being that I was familiar with Saks already as a department manager, but then that led me into working in the fashion office within Saks Fifth Avenue, which is not an office that, you know, Express or Gap really you have access to, right?
Right.
That's more at the corporate level in those types of businesses. It's very, like I mentioned, a very vertical career path, where this is, you know, a little bit more horizontal. And I ended up having that experience in the fashion office led me to work with a high-end shopping center who did fashion events. And you know, with my experience and having a marketing degree in the fashion industry, I had a lot of the experience that they were looking for a shopping center. So I was assistant marketing director for a high-end shopping center at first. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got event experience that led me into more, you know, giving me a little bit more diversified.
It's still an amazing climb. And I imagine there are a lot of parallels, you know, from running a store to running an entire center and some of the goals staying the same. However, mm-hmm. To do that switch up, did you have a mentor? Did you have anyone along the way saying you should take this to a larger scale? I think you have the properties or the qualities that would transfer well, or did you just kind of make that leap when you saw those opportunities?
I think I just made the leap. Uh-huh. Yeah, I will say I would call my first boss that worked with at the small shopping center very much a mentor to me, but he was after I made the jump. So yeah, to answer your question of, you know, directly, no, but then eventually, yes.
Got you.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So what had you, you transitioned from the shopping center into McCulloch?
Right. So that was purely a family decision.
Okay.
So working with shopping centers, I climbed a ladder there, assistant marketing director into a marketing director. It was a tourism manager in that time frame too for Horton Plaza. And all that was fabulous experience and I loved my job, but I had a baby and that really changed mm-hmm. things for me. Ended up my husband, who was very ambitious and started his own business, I, you know, helped and gave my input from the side as I was working a full-time job. But then when we had a baby, I couldn't be a mom, a full-time, giving 150% like I love to do for my job. Like I said, loved my job, but I could not give 100% to both things, mm-hmm. both my job and a baby who, you know, obviously needed me to be there. You know, I had to relieve a nanny at a certain time, and you couldn't work the extra hours that you would want to work to get the job done that I was used to doing before I had the baby.
Right.
So I couldn't give 100% that I, or 150 that I wanted to give. So, and my husband, who was doing very successful by the time I'd gone back to maternity leave, he was so successful that he couldn't handle it all. And he was, you know, it was a big leap of faith, but it was the right thing to be able to help him execute, you know, and do whether he needed me to do billing or whatever. He didn't need to market himself because referrals were coming in and nice. Repeat business and all that, which is what you want. But he was stifled in the fact that he, you know, who was going to do his billing and who's going to, you know, collect the money and who's going to, you know, reconcile our accounts. So all of those things or what I started out doing right away. Kept the nanny the whole time so that I could continue to work with my husband, even though I left our secure job as a with a corporation with all the benefits. You know, signed up for the independent health insurance and all of that to keep us afloat and keep us safe. But then I had to, you know, really, you know, get down and dirty and make sure that we were growing and keeping that money coming in the door. So letting my husband be billable and get, you know, it's about him working on the projects and less of the administrative work. And then slowly but surely we hired people and now we're up to 10. Well, we've been as high as 12. We're looking to hire here, so we'll probably back up to that. So, you know, it's we've grown to, you know, a larger staff in the most recent years. So.
It seems like there would be some hidden attributes that you had when you're transitioning, you know, the original to, you know, to help with bookkeeping and all of that and account maintenance and things like that. But then when you switch over, as you mentioned, you know, as you climbed further along, a lot of your marketing and things like that must have come back into touch base.
Right, right. I mean, at the beginning, I mean, having to do everything. And then I did have to put together materials like resumes and, you know, any of the marketing collateral that you would normally have in a company. You know, I basically was making that from scratch. But time goes on and you have that kind of pool to work from and use. But I still to this day customize everything I send out. We're still a small business in that sense. But yeah, so we're definitely, that you have a thought put into everything that we're doing. It's not just, you know, like you have, you know, a shelf item you can pull out and just send it on. That creating those documents and things over time, I gradually focused my time on that and brought in somebody to help me with the accounting side of things. So,
outsource.
Outsource.
Yes. That's interesting. So with getting involved with, you know, when you left this kind of mega, you know, position over this mega shopping center, I think I just picture the shopping center and think, that sounds rowdy. But, you know, either way, however the position was.
Very fast paced.
When you switched over to working with your husband and you switched genres, you know, the landscape architecture industry.
Oh, yeah, there was a definite learning curve.
Did you, what were like some of the most pleasant things you ran into and what were some of the harder things?
I'll take the harder thing first because I think it kind of lends itself to be a kind of a double-edged sword because it's not, maybe more in the sense of that it's a plus and a minus, but we, or I should say I, was given suggestions to join a particular membership organization that was an education-based group that I believe to this day I give back to that organization because it brought me to where I am with my education of what this industry, completely different industry that I had to learn, was all about. It's the Society for Marketing Professional Services that I currently serve on, actually their national, their society board.
Right.
And, it was putting me in front of potential clients at the same time as I was learning about how to become a better marketer for this industry and all the ins and outs and the acronyms, because there's a lot of them in the building industry. But also about, who are the players, you know, how do you interact? What's the traditional sales process in this industry? And it's really relationship building is what I learned. So that even strengthened my reason to be there even more because I needed to be in front of these people and developing relationships. And probably, 17 or 18 years later, I'm still working on that. I mean, it's going to ever be an evolving process
because who people suggested? Change. How did you find out
about
that?
I think it was, I feel like my memory serves me to say that I went and volunteered at a AIA golf tournament and somebody I just happened to ask, you know, what do you suggest? What kind of group should I join or get involved in? And they recommended SMPS and I went and I became a member right away and jumped in and fully believe. And when you join an organization, no matter what industry, you should be volunteering your time and getting yourselves in front of other people through relationship building on committees, working on projects together and things like that. And so I immediately began to serve in that organization as well and, you know, attend everything they had and, you know, learn as much as I possibly can, soak it all up. And that's what taught me the CPSM, which is my Certified Professional Services Marketer certification, is through SMPS, which is basically the leader in of marketing for the architecture industry. It's the AEC industry, which stands for Architectural Engineering Construction, another acronym.
Right.
So that organization taught me through the CPSM program. I was forced to learn all of the, what they call the domains of practice, which is basically learning how to effectively put your marketing collateral together, how to do promotion in this industry, mm-hmm. How to do your market research and your market planning. All of these things are something you have to learn their way, if you say, basically the industry standards for this industry, that would help, tell you that you're proficient in this, right? So you have these letters at the end of your name that say you've gone through what you need to do well in this, or to market yourself well in this industry. So you're kind of, in a way, it was to help me to be taken more seriously as somebody who's mm-hmm. proficient in this industry, but also it forced me to learn.
Yes.
In order to be certified. So yeah, so that was kind of,
I like that idea. I mean, of garnering that education. It's very I think it's flagship of you. I've met with a lot of entrepreneurs that do very well at bootstrapping, but it's very clumsy. There are a lot of things
true.
That
kind
fall
of fall into
the cracks.
Things. Yeah,
and there's a bunch of, I was talking with someone just the other day, and she's a rowdy, cowgirl, and she just said, "Listen, if I need to know it, it's on a list and it's online, and I'm going to find it." And I thought, that is true, and I like that gusto. I mm-hmm. like that kind of bootstrapper, young entrepreneur mentality. But I do think that. It lacks, I just picture someone missing a bank payment that way. I picture something bad happening on the mortgage on the shop
so
or something
loose
going.
That there's not enough structure to it.
Yeah,
I get
you. Well,
and
also, whose list are you referring to? Within these organizations and the structure that you've got, you have these kind of they've been tested and they fulfill this educational piece of information that I think is really important that I don't think a lot of people investigate. I haven't mm-hmm. heard it for a while that people are getting involved with, different organizations that have these training modules that will actually get you in front of not just the clients you need to, but have the information.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard, accelerators and incubators and things like that, but this is a different kind of beast.
Yeah. Well, and I think what I like about it too is that I still have my research material. Well, they update them, but I keep in touch and keeping relevant so that I have a book to look at. If I have a question or if I need to refresh on something, I can go back to it and refresh myself about it. Mm-hmm. And then there's always consistent, you have CEUs in this particular situation. So I'm constantly keeping myself abreast of everything that's current because I'm having to go to the events and listen to speakers or be refreshed. And sometimes you need to hear it a few times to remember, oh yeah, I got distracted and I need to get back to that mm-hmm. To be refreshed on
what
you should be doing.
What is a CEU?
Continuing education units.
Okay.
Most organizations, you get certified, whether you're what industry, you need CEUs or, I think there's other terms for them, but CEUs is them.
I want my doctor to have CEUs.
Yeah.
I feel like MDs don't go back enough.
I know.
There's industries where I'm like, why aren't
they
updating that education? I'm sure some of them would scream that they do, but I'd like to know what my next surgeon, if I have to go to surgery
again,
I'm going to say, what's your CEUs?
Have you kept up with everything?
Exactly. So the next, let's look at the next 3 years. So we have this, the trajectory thus far, you came on board in, is it 2001 or 2002?
So I came on board in 2001. I was always along on the side before that as a wife, but, mm-hmm. I was officially partner in August of 2001, and then we incorporated and became, I became majority owner. In 2002, in the very January, so it was within a few months, and the reason, and I think you're going to probably ask me, I'm just going to get ahead of it. I think mm-hmm. Why we incorporated as me being the woman-owned business,
mm-hmm.
Because we felt like I was going to be running the business and he was going to be doing the work, right? Because I'm not the landscape architect, he is, and so we kind of felt like, as being the woman owned, I'm going to be operating the business. It made sense for me to be the majority owner.
Yeah.
And we knew that would be advantageous for us for, any kind of public work that we were going to be chasing.
It's forecasting a lot back in 2002. It wasn't what it is, right now, especially with all
and
the
that
equal
has
opportunity
not been easy.
Fulfillments.
Yeah, either because.
Well, I was going to say, did you know any other female-owned, majority-owned landscape architecture? I feel like the field is just lower representation.
Yeah, there's a few out there. The ones that I know of do not have, well, there's ones that are just sole proprietor, and of course, then that's easy. Mm-hmm. But the ones that have a partnership, it becomes a little more dicey because we're seen kind of fall under the kind of an engineering category with at least the state of California, which case they want the woman to be the license holder to the business. So if you're a woman-owned business in our field, you need to be a landscape, well, at least some of the state, you need to be a landscape architect holding a license. So I cannot be certified through the state of California because I am not the landscape architect holding license. My husband is. However, for the federal, the small, which is where we are, a woman-owned small business.
Right.
So my corporate documents show me I'm 66% or 67. But it doesn't matter if they don't have license, right? So that kicks me out for the women business enterprise. But for women-owned small business, the federal, they don't have that stipulation. So I just show my corporate documents and then I'm good. So
your trajectory is you come on, you become majority owner of the company in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
You're growing.
Yeah.
You know, the business is already getting ready to kind of take a leap and things like that. What, after you kind of got your bearings and did a bunch of this with the marketing certification and things like that, what would you say was your first, like, move on the company? Did you revamp a website? What was your first move into kind of making it
all
your own?
Yeah.
All of it.
All of that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we did a little bit of a branding change. We added a mission statement. We, our logo was updated. We kind of tried to become more of a perceived corporate type feel so that we weren't seen as a small business only working on small projects. Because my husband had experience in working on very large planning projects in the past with his former firm. So we didn't want to put us in a corner and say, you know, we're only a residential landscape architect, because that's not where his forte was. Mm-hmm. Although he could do residential and he did a great job with it, his love or his what the niche that he really wanted to be put in would be more like resort or commercial landscapes. Multifamily, that type of thing. So that we
is
would
that
be
mainly
seen.
Urban? Is
yeah,
that
it's kind of an urban design.
Urban.
Okay. Yeah. So and getting into some like city planning and things like that.
Yeah.
And we really kind of in the last more recent years have gotten more of that city planning. There's been a handful of projects over the years, but more recently that's come our way. It's taken 20 years to get there.
Yeah.
But because we wanted to not put ourselves in this as this res, and there definitely is a great amount of talented residential landscape architects, and that's all they do is residential.
Mm-hmm.
We more recently have gotten, you know, a few projects when we know somebody that's a developer that we're working with or something, and then they want us to do their personal home. So we get that business, but automatically almost. So
sure.
It's not something we have to market to.
Yeah.
And if we marketed us as that way, then we maybe would be bringing in only that. We would not get you put yourself in an image corner, I would say. You know.
Well, it feels like a different kind of contract as well. I mean, commercial and
large-scale
residential, it feels like the time scales are going to be slightly different than if they would be residential.
Yeah, as much as we love doing residential, I will tell you it's not as profitable as another, because it's a little bit more of an emotional process for a homeowner versus a commercial owner. So, you know, it's a different process in that regard. But we wanted to, so our image that we were putting out there, we wanted to make sure that it was not putting us down as a residential.
Well, now we're getting in, like, and this is kind of already crawling us into brand. I'm interested when I hit your website, and for those of you listening, you should absolutely hit the website. I have it as MLASD.com.
That's right.
And I'm taken, so as an art historian, I have a history. I taught art history, and that's what my master degree is in. But I'm taken with your landing page a photo.
Oh.
And there's a lot there, and I could unpack that, which I won't bore anyone with. But There's that. It's an art history term, unpacking that. Yeah. But there's an image that's landed upon, and my favorite part about it is absolutely not what you would think of.
Exactly.
Traditional landscape architecture. Yes. And it's one of the most beautifully lit, obscure. It conjures up feelings and emotions from mine from my past, and I feel like it would do that for everybody.
Oh, wow.
And it's just this
really
very moving piece. But you guys should all hit the landing. I won't describe it or anything. There is this natural piece of wood and tree amongst a field and like this greenery. But what I love about it was this presentation of almost nature's architecture involved in it, you know, and this conversation between like what you are doing as this human development and where it meets. And so for me, on the branding scale, that was my first read and hit on you.
Yeah, perfect. And I'm so glad it worked.
I thought, wow, that's a really bold thing to talk about the way nature does its own landscape architecture at times. And then to kind of climb through, and I did get a really great feel. Your website's beautiful, and it does have this great feel of, it does introduce your urban living, you know, these kind of high-rise moments that you've done in downtown San Diego and different places, as well as like the corporate feel and things of that nature. And I'm wondering how much of that came to you as you did it, or how much of it formed you versus you forming it?
Yeah.
With your brand, because I get a really good feel for your brand, mm-hmm. but I want to know how much of it was like, well, we're getting all this work, that's our brand, or we want that to be our brand, we're going to go get that work.
Wow, that's a really good question. I think it's a little bit more of an evolution. My husband is very, very passionate about what he does, and he's been the design driver for, obviously, as the designer for, head designer for our firm. And that photo that you mentioned is all him, and really our entire
so that photo
our
was
vision
him?
Yeah, that he took the photo, and it was his intention to put that on our I mean, he's very passionate about our vision
brave,
vision and mission. We had a for our vision and mission statement that we created where we talk about nature and how we are, you know, basically living amongst nature, you know, it's the people, the converging of nature and people. That really is, you know, speaks from him and his philosophy. So luckily he's as passionate as he is, and it bleeds over into the people that work for us. Mm-hmm. And they basically, if you say drink the Kool-Aid,
right?
Whatever, yeah. they are in the same belief. And so, you know, therefore our work has kind of come from that. So it's evolved from his passion, but so the brand, you know, as I mentioned, is something that we've come together as, you know, what something that comes from his, you know, kind of take on the profession.
And does that carry over into what are you guys projecting for the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years? Do you have like a goal or a vision or a mission statement, or are you just going to surf it out?
Yeah, you know, I think that our intention is to do more of the larger scale planning projects that we really enjoy having kind of our hand in, if you will, or have a say in how our built environment is around us. So if, you know, rather than it just being taking it project by project, but also looking at how does this all affect us long term in some, you know, some of the planning policies that are involved in putting together you know, a new district or a city or a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. All of those things, you know, they take a part into the design, because it's how the public interacts with the work or with the project. So it's definitely a larger scale approach to landscape architecture, and not so much just, you know, taking a 100-by-100-foot property, and what are you going to do with this property? And that is part of it, but that's not everything.
No,
you gotta think about what's around that 100-by-100-foot.
Yeah, larger,
you know,
view.
The larger,
I know,
view.
It's placemaking, right? It
it's
really makes it makes a space. It really does, and this is the world in which we live in. I truly, you know, in analyzing spaces and places for the past 20 years in my life, and how we all interact with them and things like that. I think landscape architecture is kind of this very silent, powerful pillar. You know, that there's, you go places and you think, why does this feel so wonderful? And it's not just the building or the this or that. It's Very much so,
how
the way
things
work
grew up. Together.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. The way it interacts with everything as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. Like somebody, it's funny because people don't realize you. Pretty much, it's everything outside a building. You know, architects work with beautiful buildings, and then you have to deal with how what happens on the outside of that building and how mm-hmm. does it connect to the space around that. You know. So yeah. Yes. Definitely.
So you're going to your goal is larger scale planning projects, and then with that, would you grow your company, or are you going to keep it tight and fast?
We don't really want to get much larger than maybe mm-hmm. two or three more people, maybe okay. maybe four. At this point, you know, we are now going to be empty nesters here in the next year. So, you know, we probably need to start thinking about how we would transition things too in the next maybe 15 to 20 years. So we want to, you know, kind of be looking at that too, and not, I don't know how much larger we want to get in that sense, because then we want to make sure that we, you know, transition things over to someone or something, or I don't know what that is yet.
It sounds like it's gone really well. I mean, touching yeah. a little bit on you being involved in a family business, you yeah. know, you kind of leaving earlier on, you know, 19 years ago, this the moment of your own and joining forces. It looks from the outside like it was a job well done, that both of you did well. Did it feel that way all the time?
No. I mean, you know, I think any business owner will tell you there's ups and downs, but mm-hmm. you know, I feel like we accomplished something by surviving the downturn of 2008, 2010.
Yes.
You know, at one point it was just him and I for a little bit, but you know, we got back to it and started hiring people again and got through it, which is great. We learned to diversify. That was another mm-hmm. thing, you know, and you know, trying to keep our you know, eggs kind of spread around in two different, many different baskets versus just, you know, one or two baskets. So that was a lesson that helped us. But yeah, so it's not been a bed of roses, but it all has been way worth it. So, I mean, there's nothing, I can't say there's nothing I wouldn't have done differently, but I'm so glad I've made the decisions. A lot of the major decisions I've made have been very good for us to
propel
us forward.
That's good. That drops me into like one of my favorite final questions, which is, what are the past, over the past, I don't want to take the entire span, that seems wicked, maybe last five years, uh-huh. or let's say 5 to 10, mm-hmm. what are the three things that happened to you or that you did that you're most grateful for? And they don't have to be good or bad, just three things over the past 5 years that you're so glad either happened or that you did, because you wouldn't be here right now without them.
Oh, wow. In the last 3 to 5 years. Oh, man. Well, definitely the leap of faith is to start the company, you know, for me to join my forces with my husband is one
yeah.
thing. I would say we, just about 5 years ago, we made the change to a different office space. And we did that for the relationship that we had with an architect, urban designer, that we had established over the years prior, who was going out on his own, and he wanted to share space. He was looking for a space, and he thought we would share space with him. And we had been coming from working in a building where we worked with, where we were in with another with architects, mm-hmm. and architects are a big part of our client base. So we really benefited from being in the same building with an architect, you know, bringing us work and things like that, and being top of mind when you're in the same building. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, there were two architects in the first building that we worked in, and we have relationships with those two to this day. One of them's now actually retired recently, but the point being that when we looked at moving with this other architect to another building, it was important that we stayed in a building in an environment where there were other architects. And so we have a very large amount of our portfolio with that architecture firm that we're in the new building with.
Nice. Happy
and
union.
That so yeah, it's been a very good thing for us to be I think that if we were to look at moving, we would want to make sure that we were in a building with other potential clients or clients that we
That's
know.
Clever.
Because
yeah.
it's very convenient to be in the same building with your client.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a service that you can provide to them that, you know, that you just can't do with everybody. So
Nice.
It's been beneficial for sure.
I like that. That's an awesome
example. I'm not sure if that was three things, but.
It was two. Yeah. Making the decision to go and then the space. Do you have a third or do you want to skip it?
I'd have to probably think on. Or maybe just in the sense of growing. When you grow, you've got to bring in, you know, I thought of the very good decision I made was to join Vistage. I don't know if you're familiar with Vistage, but it's a CEO coaching group and a membership organization, but fabulous amount of advice from a group of CEOs that share, you know, similar issues, and we help each other out and have a chair, somebody who kind of a mentor of sorts to kind of help you make good decisions. Because sometimes it's lonely at the top, as they say. Yeah. And sometimes when you're making some decisions, you just need to know that you're making the right decision. So I definitely am happy that
I have heard of Vistage. And it is interesting to think of CEOs needing to, you know, share, especially with someone was just telling me recently, you know, we all have similar HR issues.
Yeah.
Like just sharing our knowledge and our information.
Yeah. Yeah. And what to do about employees bringing on, firing, things like that. Nobody likes to do that. But it's definitely something that when you're doing it, you want to make sure you're doing things correctly and how to handle situations correctly. So,
yeah. So if you ran into a young woman who is graduating from FITM today and, you know, she's getting ready to launch into, you know, possibly running Westfield at some point tomorrow and everything else, what pieces of advice would you give her that you think would be most useful to her right now?
I definitely would say, be in the right place at the right time, which is not easy to do, but to network. Mm-hmm. Network and then you know, keep those relationships positive, you know, no burning bridges. You want to make sure that you keep things so that you can call up at any time and ask questions to someone that you've met, you know, having that cup of coffee with them. But also I think that I had no idea what my career was going to take, where it was going to take me. I just wanted to learn and grow in what I was doing. And this opportunity kind of came in front of me, and it seemed to be the right decision to make at the right time. It's a lot of prayer and making the right decision and leap of faith and all that. But definitely took an opportunity that was presented to me at the time and was the right thing.
So networking and
between being networking brave. Being brave and sometimes taking the risks of things that, gosh, I think there's a lot of like, oh, you set a goal and you need to work towards that goal, which is never a bad thing for people who have a very sure mind of where they want to be. But sometimes to be is to go through a different door and being open to change.
Open to change.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I mean, the idea of, yeah, I mean, networking, being brave, and then being open to change, being able to pivot. That's true.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Nice. Sure. Well, that was awesome. Now, I always end with every conversation with asking, so let's see, today is Friday.
Yeah.
We're kissing the weekend. What are you most looking forward to doing this weekend?
Probably just relaxing a little bit. I have a list of things to do, of course, I always do, but...
How do you relax?
If I really had a choice, I'd be at the beach. Mm-hmm. Relaxing. Yeah.
Yes.
That is my favorite place to go. I pretty much spending time with my family and my kids, and my son's about to go off to college, so I'm trying to soak up as much time as I can with him, for sure.
It's a good place to do it. I feel like anywhere in SoCal is you can relax. You know, I don't want to be too much of the tourism board, but it's I'm like, you just walk down the street. You're going to relax in Southern California.
That's very true. Yeah, going to get a cup of coffee. Live in North Park, so I've got like these cafes nearby that I can just go and relax. And
absolutely.
A cup of coffee somewhere is nice too. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with me today. I really appreciate it and giving us all of your information. It'd be fun to meet up again and talk to you more about. I have so many questions about design.
Great.
I had
Sounds
to really
like you have
refrain
a foray
right
in that.
There.
Yeah, you have a little.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a little passion.
I'd love to pick your brain. But for all of those of you out there, again, Catherine's company is the McCullough Landscape Architecture. The website is mlasd.com. And thank you, Catherine,
thank
for meeting
you.
With me.
Thank
I
you
really
so much
appreciate
for having
it.
Me. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I will talk to you next time. And until then, remember to always bet on yourself.